The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Beyond. And hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 627 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where we are bringing you all the latest and greatest in the news and releases and exciting world of the PlayStation, the year of our Lord, the PlayStation 5. But there wasn't much PS5 news this week. However, we still got plenty to talk about. Joining me this week are Max Scoville.
Let us prepare to open that cabinet of erotic pleasures known as the game.
Off to a great start with Brian Alzano as well.
Hi, and I'd like to publicly apologize for last week when I knocked on wood, hoping that Cyberpunk wouldn't get delayed. This is not wood. I don't know what this is.
What is,
but this can't be trusted.
This is not wood, yeah.
Some sort of a formica, a composite, we don't know.
Speaking of, I wanted to roll into, as we have been opening the show, with comments of the week. And this first comment comes, all of these comments come from the YouTube version of last week's episode, which I was not on for the full time of, but thank you guys for taking the reins and steering that ship. In those comments, Zoella said, "God, I hope that game doesn't get delayed," was a quote from the episode. "This video hasn't aged well." And I think most of the comments on last week's show were about you guys talking about Cyberpunk not getting delayed.
No, it was all like, "What are you going to play in April?" "Oh, we're all playing Cyber." I guess we're not.
Yep.
Guess we're all playing Resident Evil 3, maybe. I don't know. Maybe Final
Unless
Fantasy
that gets
7.
Delayed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I would like to formally apologize on behalf of Jonathan, who should have more zinc and vitamin C.
I really need
Wait, no, you weren't sick. You were at the rat park.
But then I was sick afterward. Yeah. Probably from the rat park.
The plague.
Yes, from the rats.
Fun
A Plague Tale Innocence.
Coming to Game Pass soon. That's not our console.
Stop saying that.
You're
giving them money.
Anyway, also in the comments, Real Sergeant Tom said, "Considering Sony's last E3 had some random guy playing a wood flute for 5 minutes and then another random tent sideshow, we're not really missing much about them deciding not to be at E3
this
year."
That is very well put. I really like that. We've been joking about that for a while, about how the last time they did a press conference, it was like so messy and weird that it's actually funny that they pulled away. Like, it was, they just threw such a weird botched party that they were like, "No more parties ever again."
Sony went from like years of E3s where it was like the reveal of the PS4 and that big coming out party to like the year of dreams with Final Fantasy VII Remake showing up and Shenmue 3 and all these things, to the year with God of War and Spider-Man and all that stuff, to the year after with God of War and Spider-Man and all that stuff, to that year where it was like, here's a church where you're going to listen to a song.
The games were huge, right? Yeah. Like, everything was there. Like, all the content was there, but it was just the wrapping paper was weird.
Yeah, yeah. It was
you guys like AAA video games? All right, what about world music and downbeat folk followed by high-res throat slitting and a lesbian kiss? Games! All right.
It's a weird show.
We're back.
Frankie B in the comments also said, "Looks like I might be in the minority, but I really enjoyed watching the last few E3s. Will still want to watch it, but it's disappointing as PlayStation, my favorite platform." And I think most of our lamenting about PlayStation at E3 was that last year. I think we can all unequivocally say those last few years before that year, 2018, were phenomenal for PlayStation. They were edge of your seat. These are the best press conferences I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I can't overstate this enough, but our sort of lack of enthusiasm over press and fans, especially going to E3 as it is today, is not because Sony pulled out. It's because Sony is one of the several companies that have pulled out of that show floor over the last few years. Yeah. It is a changing, devolving show, and I don't think for the better. And I think that, like, there was a time to go, and it was several years ago, and that was a magical time for it. But it's kind of a Woodstock 99 right now.
Yeah.
And I love Raging Against the Machine, but, you know, I don't want to spend $9 on water.
You're drastically overselling what that show is right now. Woodstock 99 was a good time, man. It was a really, really rowdy.
Was it?
No, it was not. time. I still want an Assassin's Creed set at Woodstock 99.
That would be great.
That'd be fun. And then last but not least, Eric wrote in the comments, when Jonathan is away, Max and Brian play.
Hell yeah.
And I just really like the idea that the show, I haven't watched the full show yet, but that it was just a chaotic
I think it was
mess.
Fine.
I feel like you guys probably did a good job with
it.
I'm not,
it was all right.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I always get this like flustered substitute teacher thing where I'm like, hey, everybody. Let's see. Mr. Dornbush left the lesson plan. Looks like we're all watching Twister in Espanol.
We're actually just going to roll out a CRT TV and just show educational films for everybody. But we couldn't figure out how to work it. And the smart kid in class wasn't there.
We'll watch
You're
Hamlet
supposed to turn
parts.
In a worksheet.
And I also wanted to open this week with a question of the week. This comes from the Facebook Podcast Beyond group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond. And Hussein asked, what happened to SSX?
Good question. What happened to snowboarding games in general?
Yeah.
Death Stranding aside. We
and
really haven't gotten
Breath
in.
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, Breath of the Wild. Yeah.
Steep.
Yeah. Happened.
Yeah. I think that there was a zeitgeist of like, what do you call it? Action sports, extreme sports being huge in the 90s and early 2000s that just kind of dried up.
Yeah.
It's weird though. Like, I don't know. I feel like I see more adults skateboarding around. I mean, I see more adults in San Francisco anyway. It's not really a kid city, but like, I don't know. I remember when I was in seventh grade, like skateboarding was the coolest thing and snowboarding was like skateboarding on a mountain, you know, and it was like, it was cool.
Yeah.
And then they put it in like Capri Sun commercials and Mountain Dew commercials and you're like, this is badass. And then that kind of disappeared.
A lot of that kind of, you're totally right. A lot of that kind of went away at the same time. I mean, we also had Tony Hawk games. We had Matt Hoffman, triple BMX, whatever it was, erotic erotic bicycle man.
Dave Mira.
Yeah. Hypersexual snowboard ski zone.
I miss the snowboard.
But there's also
kids.
Like,
they're wholesome.
Yeah. I'm not a big sports guy, but it is interesting to watch how cyclical these things are in the zeitgeist in terms of how big they get. Usually around one figurehead, like someone like Shaun White was like a household name for a little while.
Yeah.
And then Tiger Woods obviously was like, golf games were huge. Golf was probably
took him off the name of those games.
Yep.
After everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore revitalized golfing as we know it.
Yeah. Happy Gilmore game.
Oh, me too.
Great. Yeah. Just a beat 'em up golf game.
Yeah.
It would be great if the first few levels were just ice hockey and then you get kicked out and then it's a golf
game.
God, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Madison is missing a lot of money. By not making space on it. Anyway,
I agree.
Of course, we're not here just to talk about Adam Sandler films. Sorry on your snub at the Oscars, Adam. We're also here.
Uncut Gems, it's so good. Everyone go see that. I'm so mad not enough people.
These are the number one Uncut Gems fans.
That's true.
I think it's IFT.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
We are here, of course, to talk about PlayStation games, and one of the big things I want to talk about this week is sort of an all-encapsulating topic that does tie back to last week's episode and the irony of it, which is delays. There have been so many delays, not just for last week's episode, but since then. Two of the most recent ones include Dying Light 2 being indefinitely delayed. It was originally going to be coming out this spring. It is now coming out sometime in the future. Iron Man VR was supposed to come out in February, right around my birthday. I was really excited. It's now been delayed until May 15th, 2020. Of course, last week, Final Fantasy VII Remake was delayed by a month. Marvel's Avengers was delayed until September. And Cyberpunk 2077 was also delayed from April to September. So we are looking at many of the end of this generation's biggest games coming later, very close to this new generation. Of course, that's not to mention the smaller delay that The Last of Us Part 2 also got a few months back into May. We're seeing a lot of delays. The big first opening question I want to ask both of you guys is, and if we're treading on too much conversation from last week, stop me. Are you guys worried by any of these delays?
I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I'm annoyed as like someone who wants to play games when it's not nice out. You know, like that's one thing I hate is like, oh, like cool, like March. Like I'm not going outside in March. I hate that month. That's a crappy one. And then they're like, no, good news is getting kicked to like September. And I'm like, that's beautiful outside. The good news is like if Cyberpunk coming out in April, I would have spent, I would have been outside being like, I wish I was inside playing video games. And if I was inside playing, it's beautiful outside. I should go outside. But like, I don't know. It's frustrating. It's stupid. Both in terms of like as a gamer, but also as someone who has to talk about these things. Talking about delays is not exciting.
Yeah.
It's not like a dramatic cancellation. It's just a mild inconvenience. It's like, oh, we have to wait longer. We have to tread water and be like, oh, it's Vamp. What do we hope to see? I don't know. What do you think is going to happen next? Will we see a sequel? Who knows?
There's also this fallacy that delays inherently buy the dev team more time. And by and large, from what we've seen and read anecdotally, is that they don't. They actually extend crunch, which doesn't make it so CD Projekt Red has like an extra 6 months or something to work on this game. It just means that they're like, you know, pedal to the metal, nose to the grindstone, other stupid sayings, harder than ever for even longer, which is like unfortunate. And I know a lot of people don't really think about that part. And in many ways, I don't blame them. Like, they don't really want to know how the sausage is made. They just want to have the sausage. And I get that. But like digging into it and then like following devs on Twitter, a lot of them are really saying a lot of the same stuff here, which is this is not necessarily giving them more lax creative freedom, more space to sort of like spread their wings a little bit. It's actually making it harder for them and extending their work hours. They want to ship projects, right? They want to get these projects out. And that this makes it so that finish line is further down. And that's disappointing. The thing that I've been saying is it's sort of, and this obviously feeds into the crunch culture as well, is that at this point, like, just make the games next gen launch games. And I understand it's not as easy as dragging and dropping, but something like Cyberpunk.
PS5.
Of course, yeah, right? Something like Cyberpunk is being developed concurrently with high-end PC hardware, which means that, hypothetically, there are versions of it that exist that are way better looking than the ones that we're all going to play on our consoles that we bought 5 years ago or 3 years ago, right? Depending on if you jumped in with the mid...
For Pro or whatnot.
The mid-gen upcycle or whatever it was. Yeah. And so, I don't want to play this game in September. I want to play this game on day one on PS5. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that entails. And I don't want PC players to be punished so that I can selfishly get like the greatest launch game ever. But like, I know on launch day, we're going to be playing like Futuristic Racer and like Last Gen Port and like Indie Puzzler. But like, I want to play Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
I want to play Cyberpunk on day one.
September is a really interesting month for a couple of these games, Avengers and Cyberpunk, to be delayed into. Obviously, they're not talking about the cross-gen versions of these, but I think it's safe to assume there will be cross-gen versions at some point, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like Cyberpunk is going to be a massive single-player game. Multiplayer
is coming down.
TBD.
Yeah.
Right? So hypothetically, you could take a month off of work, finish Cyberpunk, play the next-gen consoles, get it all done, right? Avengers is a weird one because that's going to be a sort of games-as-a-service thing. That's an ongoing Destiny-style platform. And so they'll figure out some way to communicate those things where you can jump in on day one on PS5, pick up your save from PS4, and keep playing. How all of that is going to communicate is interesting.
Yeah, well, and presumably it'll be a backward-compatible game.
Yeah.
But will there be a PS5 version that we're going to want to buy down the line?
Yeah.
And how will the people who are maybe playing the backward-compatible version feel about that, having played that version for 6 months when this new gen version?
We are all acting like backwards compatibility is like a sure thing.
Well, we know it's happening.
Do we know?
We know. Backward, they have confirmed.
For sure.
That is one of the things they have confirmed. They have not really talked about the extent of it.
Yeah.
Across the board?
They haven't really talked about
For
the
PlayStation,
extent.
Yeah.
It's going to be very annoying if they're like, some titles. And you're like, oh,
well,
good.
Yeah, I think you were probably here, but we were theorizing about that. Like, what does BC mean on PS5? Does it mean that it will play discs? Does it mean that your digital library is entirely unlocked on day one? Does it mean that they'll slowly drag and drop games over, like the way Xbox did with the 360 backwards compatibility titles? Like, that stuff takes time, right? And so
it's going to be kind of a real kick in the ass if like Cyberpunk comes out and we're like, well, it'll be cool, I'll still play it on PS5, and it's just like doesn't play nice, and it's like, you gotta hang out, wait for the PS5 patch or the PS5 version or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this too, about like the Wii U would boot into Wii mode, or the Wii would boot into GameCube mode, and that's how they did backwards compatibility over there.
Well, and based on the leaked specs, that's the current thinking about how the PS5 will work, is essentially it'll be able to switch into a PS4 or PS4 Pro mode.
Right. Which I'm okay with. I mean, I did say that I would like everything under, you know, one umbrella, but it is what it is. But that would mean that we could get that game working day one. But it's also, they're going to make a PS5 version of that game. They're going to double dip on all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, especially these, like, ongoing games.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess like that's where all the big questions are right now. It's not only are these games getting delayed, they're getting delayed so close to next gen launches that will they work on day one? Will they be patched on day one to just be a PS5 game, or will they sell us a brand new SKU for $60 and will we buy it? And the answer to all of those is I don't know. Yes. And yes.
So yeah. Going back to the delay thing, like everyone sort of knew that, you know, this gen would be happening presumably this year thereabouts.
Yeah.
So like any games that have been in development for this long, or for, you know, the amount of time it takes to develop a game and reveal it publicly, it's pretty safe bet that you're aiming pretty close. So it's almost like trying to land a plane on two runways at once.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. I don't know. I think as far as like delays go, it would be pretty weird if like, I mean, we did have this. I remember last gen when they revealed Watchmen, or not Watchmen, Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
They're like men, but they're smaller. The Watch Dogs, that demo in Chicago, that was incredible. We're all like, this is amazing. How is this ever going to possibly work on PS3 and Xbox 360? This is nuts. And everyone's like, oh, it's on super high-end PC hardware. It's probably a hint of what next-gen has in store. And we're all like, this is incredible. This is great. And then they kept kind of drip-feeding us that stuff. And then they were like, oh, it's going to be a launch game. And then it's like, no, it's not. It's going to be launch window. It's
right.
It's going
right.
to be. It's actually coming out 6 months after the new hardware. And by the time that came around, it was just like, I'll wait for the second one. I'll pass.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. That also was like one of the poster boys for like the E3 downgrade conversation, and sort of looking at that and being like, wow, night and day. I mean, we called them back in the old like screenshot magazine days, you called them bullshots.
Yeah.
And now there was an entire like trailer culture around that, mm-hmm. you know? And it wasn't just seeing like a CG rendered trailer like Square does a lot, which is sort of like them being like, hey, we can make films like this. We're awesome at this. This is going to be what a cutscene looks like. They were like, this is what this game will look like. And then it didn't. And so also I want to reiterate or be clear about something. When I want Cyberpunk on day one on next gen consoles, I still want it to come to the old consoles too.
Yeah.
I don't want to rob 145 million
They'd
people.
They'd be leaving money on the table.
Yeah.
There's no way that any of these delayed games, whether or not these indicate the next gen plans, are not going to still come to current gen. You
yeah.
just wouldn't want to risk that.
Mm-hmm. It's just weird to watch. It's almost unprecedented to see this much stuff, but up against the launch of a new cycle
yeah.
like this. And then you have Microsoft on their side being like, oh, we won't have exclusive games for a year. Everything that you can play on Xbox One Series X, you'll also be able to play on Xbox One, blah, 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 blah. And so Sony's obviously gone in the opposite direction. There will be platform exclusive launch games, which I love because I think sort of justifies your purchase. But at the same time, like these things are incredibly close together now. And yeah. this is not, we haven't really seen this like this on this level.
What do you think, Max, you were talking a little bit about like the dating of these games. What do you think these games going
dinner
out
and
days
a movie?
Together?
I yeah. think so.
With Cyberpunk.
Sorry.
Yes, please. In terms of these games being delayed to September and everything, what do you think that means for the next gen launch? Cause I don't think that means we're going to see, you know, next gen versions of Avengers and Cyberpunk day one with those release dates now. But do you think those next gen games will come at launch with the new consoles, or do you think it'll be 6 months after like a launch window?
I think they'll be announced without hard dates on them.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll be one of those things where as it comes closer, they'll be like, oh, we have a safer idea. And there's going to be that forgiving, like the days of there being a hard launch day where you go to the store and you're like, I will buy, oh, look at this, 27 games out for this new box. It's like, it's going to be launch window where it's like, these are coming out in the following 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
But don't you guys think it's like software suicide to not have games as a service running day one on your next gen systems? Like, especially incredibly popular ones. Like, don't you think that like Fortnite and Destiny and hopefully Avengers will be there on PS5 day one?
A lot of what we see at E3 is going to be things we're already familiar with. Oh, and it's going to be available day one on X platform with, you know, Z bells and whistles.
Right, right, right.
I do think a lot of those big games, Avengers is a big question mark to me, because we do also know there is supposed to be a PS4 beta coming that was supposed to be in the spring ahead of its launch. Now I don't know when that's delayed to. We don't have
right.
too much info on that. But I think the popularity of that game might determine its lead up to and when it eventually comes out on next gen. But other free-to-play and live service games like Fortnite, PUBG, Warframe. Warframe was a game that was really big with the launch of the PS4, if I remember correctly. That's probably going to be there at PS5 launch because
right.
the game has only gotten bigger. I think like these console makers, I think, would be silly not to get those games as quickly as possible onto those next gen consoles.
No, it's a really good point, because it's a lot of people trade in their last console for their new console.
Yeah.
And so if you're really into Avengers for 2 months and you trade in your PS4 for a PS5, like, you don't want to just give that up. Like, that's it. There's going to be events happening that weekend in the game to get, you know, Thor's socks or whatever. And you want to get in there, get those socks.
Taskmaster learned a new stuff.
An emote.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting way of putting it. The thing is, too, is like someone... These conversations are happening behind the scenes right now.
Sure.
And someone is going to have to figure out the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Because that will set... That'll set the precedent for how everybody else does it.
Yeah.
So if Square goes, Avengers on PS4 is playable on day one on PS5, blah, 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 then that's the way that goes, right? Unless people are just making up their own rules. If Warframe goes, it's $10 upgrade fee to play this on PS5, and Square goes,
weird.
We can do that? Oh, yeah, we're going to do that, you know?
But you also know that Fortnite is just going to be there. They're not going to charge anyone to play Fortnite on PS5.
Fortnite's an interesting one, because it's like when Nintendo launched Nintendo Online on Switch, Fortnite was like, oh, we're not part of that. You can play our game for free.
Yeah.
We're not going to charge you to play online.
Yeah.
That's not what we do, you know? And so I think that they can kind of play by their own rule. Fortnite is also, I saw a video of it running at 120 frames per second on an iPad Pro the other day. And they're like, yeah, we can overclock it here. We can do that. We can't really do that anywhere else right now, but we can do that here. And it's just like, oh yeah, so that game just drags and drops everywhere and has its own kind of rules with everywhere it goes. And so, yeah, I totally think Fortnite's going to be there on day one, but what will it be, the PS4 download?
Or will it be a new PS5 version?
It's also
play better.
That's a free game, so how does that work?
I remember like the sort of dawn of this generation was the kind of the earliest like free to play stuff I remember really talking about. Like Blacklight Retribution was
right.
The big one. Warframe.
DC Universe Online.
Yeah, yeah. And some of that was like, I think, around for last gen, like the very tail end of it.
Yeah.
But then like,
so when your ecosystem, when your video games eShop or whatever, your online store is barren on day one and there's a tab that says free, and people just drop $500-$600 in a console, you best believe they're going into that tab and they're downloading all those free games.
Yeah.
And so that stuff did really well on Switch. It did really well on PS4. Warframe, right? Like, that's like one of those things where you can jump in day one and start playing like this badass high def video game on your new toy and not have to dump a bunch of money in unless you want socks.
That's also,
stuff.
I mean, a lot of, I don't know how you compete with stuff like, you know, Fortnite at this point, Apex Legends, it's been out already. It's got a massive active user base. But if you're like, hey, that's a new free-to-play game exclusively on this thing or launching day one on this platform, it's like that's how you get, again, people see the free tab and like, oh, cool.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Try something new. Start on the ground up.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how all of these games, both the free and paid ones, navigate that space on day one of these new consoles. I did want to quickly ask before we move to the next topic, do you think with these dates, specifically in September, those are sort of the latest dates in the year we have, does that change your idea of when maybe these consoles are going to launch? I still think November is a safe bet. But does the launch of Cyberpunk and Avengers in September make you rethink that at all?
I mean, I saw some theories kicking around that maybe this means that next-gen consoles will launch in September.
Yeah.
And I'm down with that. That sounds like a blast.
It's a good way to start the fall.
Ultimately, you have to butt up against Black Friday as hard as possible. That's the biggest spending week of the year for consumers.
Yeah.
And the week after is one of the deadest. Because that's when everybody has already spent all their money and they're looking at their paycheck going, why?
I mean, if you launch new hardware in September, that gives you this wonderful grace period leading up to Black Friday to get new games out for that platform.
Yep.
And it's not just like a rush to be like, you got to get it out this week. It's like, oh, you can kind of trickle it out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody said they're launching this year. It'd be crazy if, not knocking on wood again, but it'd be crazy if one of them got delayed. You know, I mean, I think that, and they won't do this. I don't think they'll do this, but I think Sony can afford to take their time to get it right, because I don't think that Microsoft is really, or the Xbox brand really is the threat where it would overtake the entire empire right now. I mean, they sold more than 2.5 times as many consoles this generation.
Yeah.
That would be a lot of people jumping ship. I think Microsoft's going to kick ass out the gate. I think they're going to make an awesome machine. I can't wait for it. But I think Sony, if they needed to delay, could, but I don't want them to.
Yeah.
I think it'd be stupid. You know, I think that enough, like, there's that, what is it, first to 10 million?
Yeah.
It's like, it's such a big thing, and there's
momentum really helps. Yeah.
If only one person is in that race and Microsoft automatically gets 10 million and Sony doesn't, that would be, yeah. that'd be a big problem.
I mean, the year start lead that the 360 had was a really
huge.
Big thing. Not just there were problems with the PS3 launch and the way they were promoting it, but the 360 having almost a full year, if not a full year.
And Sony came around, but it took years and years to get there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think that would be wise for them. Could they afford to do it? Probably. Should they? No.
Yeah. It'll be a very strange thing to see this fall. And obviously we're inching up toward February, which is when everyone is speculating we'll get PS5 news. Will we? I don't know.
PlayStation, you guys getting a little bit stir crazy?
A little bit.
Cabin fever, just clawing up the wallpaper?
Yeah. I just know things.
I remember just being like sort of nostalgic for like, oh, who could forget the Project Morpheus or the Orbis or whatever?
Orbis,
like, oh, remember
Orbius,
Project Cafe, all these weird code names?
Yeah.
It's fun to speculate. But also it gets so tedious where you're just like, just tell me the thing.
Yeah.
Show me the box.
That coupled with all the delays has made this January a huge pain in the ass in terms of like being like, all right, what's this year look like? Let's get a big bird's eye view of what 2020 looks like. And it's like, oh, we don't know.
Yeah.
Because every 2 days.
What are you looking forward to in February? Oh, I don't know. Sonic the Hedgehog? Playing Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, the game, in dreams, maybe?
Yeah.
I can't wait for that.
I am, too.
That'll be really fun.
Really cool.
Moving on from that, though, we'll be going stir crazy for the next few weeks and months until we hear more PS5 information. But I did want to jump to another thing that I don't think you guys talked too much last week about, which is the PC port stuff, or did you touch on that? Do you remember?
It's been a long year.
Yeah, it's been a long year since last week.
Did that get confirmed or corroborated or anything?
No, there's just been a little bit more detail.
You touch on
that.
All
right.
I just had a weird deja vu because we shot a
We had a conversation
about
it. Max and I talked in another convo you can see on IGN, youtube.com/IGN, about the fact that there were reports from Kotaku that Horizon Zero Dawn is coming to PC. This has been a rumor that's been floating out there for a while, and Kotaku essentially corroborated that with three people familiar with Sony's plans, said that Guerrilla Games' Horizon Zero Dawn will be coming at some point to PC. Sony has not officially commented on that or confirmed in any way. After that, I believe there were other rumors and discussion about possibly Dreams coming to PC, which kind of would make sense. And then there were further job listings that people were pointing to from Naughty Dog, suggesting that Naughty Dog for The Last of Us Part 2 development was looking for people with familiar knowledge of PC development tools and things. So all of this is to say is that it seems like maybe Sony is looking toward releasing its exclusives on a non-Sony platform. Max, you and I talked about this a bit in terms of how it follows with the MLB The Show announcement of them moving that to other platforms, and sort of the way Microsoft has been behaving, which is essentially just buy our games. We don't care what platform it's on. It doesn't need to be on Xbox One. If it's on PC, that's great. Just buy our games.
Yeah, they want to inflate their brand.
Yeah.
Like I don't think they're not really in that long game of plastic boxes like everybody else is.
Yeah, and so I did want to bring this story up mostly to ask because I've seen a lot of people discuss this as some people from the, you know, Sony diehard point of view are going, what is Sony doing? They're giving up their exclusives and they're putting them on a different console. Do you see it that way? Do you see that as a mistake to put these games on the PC?
More people playing a game is never a bad thing. That's a weird gatekeeper mentality.
Yeah.
It also means that more people are aware of these brands, and then if they come out with like a Horizon Zero Dawn movie, the people go see it. Or it's like, I don't know, there's more fans of the thing.
Yeah. The box traditionally is not where they make their money. The console, it's the games and the software, and putting a 3-year-old game on PC right now isn't exactly making people go, well, do I buy a PS4 or a PC? I don't really think that's going to like move the needle for anyone right now.
Yeah, totally. No, I think you guys make some really good points. I totally get it from the sort of diehard fan perspective of like, why would this leave this platform? This is one of the reasons I bought this platform. But for a 3-year-old game, that game has basically extracted 99% of its sales by now, you know, bearing a giant price drop that would
sales on
usher in a brand new audience or something like that, or some PS5 port or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it does sort of fragment the kind of illusion that this is the reason that you would get this thing, this box. It plays all these games and this is the only place where you can play them. But on the flip side, like as somebody who loves wild, insane creativity and comedy that generally comes from the PC gaming community, when they get a hold of something, that means that I'm going to get to play Horizon Zero Dawn as Waluigi. You know, like once a game you love that's semi-serious makes it over there, people just go bonkers with it and they add Thomas the Tank Engine and Shrek. Freaking
Dragon Ball Z Kakarot came out on like Friday, Thursday, something.
And on Wednesday, people
already put the goose from the Goose Game in there.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's great.
He's just hanging
more
out.
Of that, yeah.
I would love if someone made Horizon Zero Dawn a mod for it where the robot dinosaurs were the Zords from Power Rangers.
Yep.
You just make them all different Zords. That'd be great. Yeah.
Oh, God, that'd be great.
I see Sony moving games, especially older games to PC, as more of a, hey, we want people to recognize our IP. We value the brands that we're building within the Sony portfolio, and we want people to play those games. And I don't think that means Horizon Zero Dawn 2 will come out day and date on PC.
No, I don't think so either. I think there's an argument, too, that people will play Horizon and they'll go, this is awesome. When does Horizon 2 come out? And it's like, oh, next year. On what? PS5. I should get a PS5.
Exactly.
Pretty sneaky, like, right?
Yeah, I think there is a system seller aspect to that. And that's an odd thing to think about because they are basically getting three-year-old leftovers of a console game, you know? And I mean, we get leftover PC games all the time on the console side, especially over at Nintendo Voice Chat. but I do think that there is an argument there that people will play that game and they'll go, oh, I got to play the sequel. I don't want to wait 3 years. I'm going to jump on this day one and buy a PS5 as soon as I can.
Yeah.
And so I think that's smart. I mean, it's ultimately Sony getting their logo in the corner of stuff and elevating that brand.
Also, you know? Like if the new hardware is increasingly more and more basically just PCs, you know, masquerading as consoles, and you're developing for this hardware that's that close to PC, then why not? Like, double dip. I think when it was the PS3, it was another story because it's like that was a bizarre different architecture, allegedly. And then I don't even know what the PS2 had going for it. I guess it was kind of PC-ish, but
ish?
Not.
Yeah, I don't know the architecture.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that was, I think you go far back enough and it's like, the divide between consoles and PCs is that far apart.
Yeah.
And it's like, which are you making these games for? And now it's like, Microsoft's, it's always been a PC hardware. It's direct Xbox, you know, and increasingly these things are becoming more and more the same machines. So just if you're going to go to the trouble of making something for one platform and it's not that much trouble to port it over, then go for it. You know,
I think if PC is going to start taking stuff from PlayStation, then PlayStation should start taking stuff from PC, such as free online. Like, every time my PlayStation Plus auto renews, I'm like, why am I paying for this again? Like, I download like maybe one game every 3 months on PlayStation Plus, and I play online almost never because I'm a single player guy. On the PC side, basically don't have to pay for online anywhere.
Yeah.
And so can we steal that? Like if we're trading, let's steal that.
The role of PlayStation Plus and Xbox Live is a really interesting question I haven't thought about for next gen until right now, and I don't really know what the answer is. But yeah, what those services mean going to next gen with so many free-to-play games, with so many cross-gen or compatible games from different console platforms. Yeah, what all that means.
I saw a Resetera thread yesterday that stated that if you have been paying for PlayStation Plus on day one since the launch of the PS4, you will have paid $420 by the end of the life cycle, which is more money than a damn PS4.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. That's crazy. And, like, I don't know, if you look back at that, like, was that worth it? Maybe.
I think there was definitely, you could definitely graph the sort of the value there.
Yes.
There was a time where it was worth it.
Like, I have no qualms about paying for Game Pass. Again, sorry, I know it's a PlayStation show, apologies, but like, I don't know, you look at that, you're like, oh, it's a massive back catalog and a library, but it's like, you're like, oh, wait, so for, what is it, like $7, $6 a month? I don't even remember how much it is.
Well, that's like paying
60
for
bucks
Netflix.
A year. Yeah, yeah, and it's like, oh, you get one to three games a month, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of Game Pass and everything, Alexander from the Facebook group asked, with all these PC port rumors and everything, with apparently more exclusives coming to PC, do you think Sony is preparing their version of Game Pass, including spreading to other platforms? So essentially making a service that would say, hey, you can play some PlayStation games, like PlayStation Now games, on other services, which is how PS Now works right now. You can play PC.
Well, they were talking about God of War on PlayStation Now
as
being playable on PC.
Yeah.
And I believe
Horizon is going to be one of those games.
And so they're definitely dabbling in it, which is good to see. I've been saying that since day one. I want a Game Pass style system structure on PS5.
Yeah.
I think that PlayStation Now needs an entire brand overhaul. It needs, a new name, a new logo. It needs to come out there with some wow and just be like, not World of Warcraft, but just like an actual excitement factor.
That, so if I mean, it did have just, wow.
Game yeah. Pass has that like cool logo that's like a little neon sign. Again, sorry, I know it's, but like you look at PlayStation, there's like plus, view, now, shop. Like there's just all these different, there's all these different things that are like, and it's, none of it is like its own identifiable like,
brand. Yeah, yeah, what, that
like,
you well,
like I do this thing a lot where like I'll be like, oh, I want to play a game from a little while ago. Like I was talking about Remnant from the Ashes.
Yeah.
And it was like $25 on PS4 and it was included on Game Pass. And my Game Pass subscription was like, I got some crazy deal where it was like $1 a month for like 16 months or something like that. And so I was like, well, I like the PS4 controller more and I like turning on that system and playing games anymore. But I also like having $25.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play it here. And I want Sony to be able to compete with that so that I don't have to go over to Xbox to play something. I can just play it on my PS4 where I'm going to be gaming anyway. And so, yeah, I really, really hope they find something for that.
Yeah. I do think they will try to compete with Game Pass more in this new generation. I do. For me, a big sticking point, though, because I think we've talked about it in the office and just people have a lot of conjecture about it. I do not think they will offer PlayStation first party games day and date on that service if it's now or something else until they are forced to.
I totally agree.
In the same way that Xbox does, I think Xbox did that because they saw a smart way to get people to get buy this thing and it works. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Sony will do that.
Another thing that's interesting about that that's really fascinating to me is that it you get this sort of what was that bad Cloverfield movie that dropped on Netflix?
Paradox.
Cloverfield Paradox came out after the Super Bowl one year, and we're all kind of like, you know, full of meat and day drunk. And they were like, hey, by the way, brand new Cloverfield movie tonight. And we're like, oh, that's great. I don't even have to leave the house. And we turned it on, and it was totally a mediocre film. But people assessed their viewing of it as fun because they saw a movie for free. And I saw the same exact thing happen last year with Crackdown 3, which was not a great game, a kind of broken game. But a lot of people were like, hey, it was included in my thing. And so totally for me, it was worth it. I liked it, you know, stuff like that.
Well, it's
like
the Netflix occasion of things. Like, don't get me wrong. I think there are some amazing shows on Netflix, but I think we also give a lot of shows a pass on Netflix because it's like, well, it was included in the thousands of other shows.
We all watch Bird Box.
Yeah. But I actually didn't.
Yeah. Don't.
Yeah. I'm about it.
Yeah. It was just like A Quiet Place with blindfolds or whatever. Such a stupid movie. But yeah, people loved it because it was like, they didn't have, there was zero effort to get that.
Yeah.
You didn't have to go in your car. You didn't have to like camp out on Fandango and buy some ticket in the middle of the theater and get a, you know, a commemorative cup and all that, like I do for Star Wars, like a big idiot baby.
It's like all you can eat buffet logic. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's not necessarily good food, but there's a lot of go it. And get it. You're like, oh, I can get more and no one yells at me. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
it. And so I think there is an argument for that. Right now I think we all pay for PlayStation Plus in the same way we pay for our annual credit card fees. It was like, we get some perks out of this, but we don't do this because we love it. Like, we do this because we have to.
Yeah.
And, like, I do want them to pivot that into being something that I'm excited to pay for again.
Yeah.
Like, where I feel like this is justifiably worth my time and money to pay $60 a year or whatever it is. I mean, you can get deals on it.
Yeah. And we don't know what those services will look like going into next gen. Obviously, Sony has been very quiet about that. And I am excited to see what they do change or what they don't and what that means for paying for that stuff going forward.
We could have cocky Sony and they just do nothing.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, they could just leave it as is. Moving on from that, I do want to, since we're running a little shorter on time, I do want to jump right into what we're playing this week.
Yeah.
I, as you may hear from my voice, been a little sick, so I haven't been playing that much after I came back from Disneyland. I was going to play around with the big expensive lightsaber I built, and then I learned that my dog is scared of the lightsaber.
Oh.
We lit it up and it scared him, so I didn't get to use that thing too much.
You know what actually I hear helps with that is if you take a really long cardboard tube and talk through it at the
dog. Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
That calms them that down should a be good great. Deal.
Yeah. You can and also hone your Darth Vader voice doing that.
Oh, perfect. Good to know. Anyway, what have you guys been playing?
Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. Can I talk about it for the love of God?
Kakarot.
So we, Mitchell put up his review of it. Mitchell Saltzman, great guy to review that game. He's a big, huge fan of DBZ, big fan of fighting games, big fan of beat-em-ups. He gave it a 7 out of 10, which I think is just right on the nose, totally with that. That being said, it is not a bad game. 7 out of 10 is not bad.
It's good on our scale, yeah.
Yeah. Good out of 10. I love Dragon Ball Z dearly. I haven't rewatched the anime in a million years, so it's like this is pretty much a really good alternative to rewatching that. I think it's actually faster than rewatching the anime, which is 291 episodes of the original cut, and then they did like a reduced version, which a lot of people are divided on, but
It's, I think this is a probably a 60 hour game.
Wow.
It's not bad.
Yeah, but it's definitely, it calls itself an RPG. It's got a lot of RPG elements. At the end of the day, it's pretty much just a really frantic beat 'em up game. It is, when it hits like a high note, it is so good, especially if you're into DBZ stuff. Some of the cutscenes are just like jaw-droppingly gorgeous. Floating around in that world and getting to explore all the weird little corners is great. When it's like detailed and interesting, when it's one of those sort of trademark barren wastelands that you see so many of in the background of DBZ, it's like, you know, kind of whatever.
yeah.
I'm surprised at how like there's definitely parts where I'm like, this feels like a game for children, because I'm just not even trying and I'm getting like, you know, S ranks and A ranks and it's
right.
Like, okay.
I noticed that too. I played the first few hours, which is weird because I'm not a Dragon Ball guy.
Yeah.
I have like very foggy memories of like watching the original cartoon at friends' houses, like in the '80s, cause I'm old. But, I jumped in cause I was just like, first of all, I want to try to get out of my gaming comfort zone a little bit in 2020. And second of all, I'm always looking for just sort of like a fast, casual action RPG. And it's totally hitting the notes on that. The highs that it's probably giving someone like you are lost on me because I don't understand the language or the universe that it's taking place in. Mm-hmm. But I'm still finding it like fun and endearing. And it like, I feel like it alternates between it's like a pretty good looking game to looking stunning. Like there are moments where you're just like, I'm watching an anime. This is gorgeous. Like,
yeah.
Some of the fights are really funny and goofy and just the way you're both basically Supermaning and flying around and floating towards each other and beating each other up. I found like flying around in the cloud to be like a little bit wonky.
How did you find it as sort of like an onboarding thing as someone who's never watched Dragon Ball Z?
I think it does a really good job of like sort of drip feeding you characters. And then you get to like that first island and there's like, here's 10 dudes you don't know. And you're like, whoa.
So that's the big secret is I think the problems with this are the same problems with Dragon Ball Z.
Interesting.
Where like a lot of people get into Dragon Ball Z and they're like, hey, I'm here for it. And you get kind of like Stockholmed into it. And by like, you know, 20 hours in, you're like, I care about these characters. But if you ever stop and look at like the beginning of Dragon Ball Z, it is the middle of a series.
Yeah.
It is like the manga is just called Dragon Ball straight through. And if you start at the beginning, it's Goku as a kid and he grows right. up. And then about halfway through, he has a kid. And that's where Dragon Ball Z starts. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense to start there, but somehow it was a success stateside and everyone's like, yeah, I like these characters, but like it does totally dump a bunch of them on you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
also everyone is really strong at that point. Like everyone is pretty much overpowered. Everyone can fly. Everyone can shoot energy blasts. It's like, it's kind of like being dumped into an RPG, you
near
know,
the end game
after 60 hours.
Yeah.
When everyone's got like God summons and can like do like insane fast travel stuff. And you're like, this is odd.
I will say it has some of the same kind of like whiplash problems that I would say any superhero game would have where like Goku is running around 150 miles an hour and he's like super jumping into the air. But then they're like, you can't jump on that. And you're like, why? I'm a superhero. I want to be able to jump on the mountain. They're like, no, you can't. We didn't draw a ledge up there. You can't go up there. And then you go in a house and he's just like walking around incredibly slow. And like his girlfriend, I think, is like cooking him like katsu. Yep. And you're like, all right, this is kind of like a breakneck halt from what I was just doing seconds earlier. Or like you'll go running through and they'll be like, hey, you forgot Gohan. And you're like, well, where's that little boy? And they're like, he's just like hanging out in a tree somewhere. So you have to like tediously walk back and he's like walking. It's like having a toddler following you.
Yeah. I've only played the first like half hour, an hour or so before I got sick. And it was one of those things where it started and it's that mission with Gohan. And he's like, oh, you went too far. Where are you? And I'm like, oh, I have to go back.
Hi, great news. You are the world's strongest man.
Yeah.
You can fly. You can destroy mountains. You can run faster
great.
Than anyone.
Wonderful.
But you have a 4-year old son and you have to walk him to get apples.
Okay.
So slow down.
Yeah.
Take your time. Also, your wife wants you to go home. No running in the house.
Yep. Yeah.
I think now that I understand all that, it'll gel with me a little more. But at first I was kind of like, why won't you let me be the superhero man?
Yeah. It's really like, it's really weird. I'm a much bigger fan of like classic Dragon Ball. Cause it's like, I think more like I always describe Dragon Ball to Dragon Ball Z as if like, if Looney Tunes turned into the X-Men, like weird, dark, late stage X-Men, where it's like the fate of the galaxy hangs in the balance, but it began as like animals hitting each other.
Right.
Which yeah. is literally what Dragon Ball is. Like yeah. the first main villain they have is a pig who can shapeshift for 60 seconds at a time.
Yeah.
And so they like feed him a magical candy that will make him get diarrhea anytime somebody whistles. Like, that's what Dragon Ball is. And then Dragon Ball Z is, oh no, this space warlord has destroyed the planet and everyone on it, including the guy who created the magic balls that grant wishes. So we have to use other balls to wish him back to life so that we can make the other. It's the logic of like, oh, a genie grants you 3 wishes, but what are you going to wish for? I'm going to wish for more wishes. Okay. Mm. But somebody killed the genie. What are you going to do now?
Is it sort of like a Avengers Infinity Stone stuff too?
It does get there. Yeah. It's definitely like, I mean, I do like that they took the time to like put a mechanic of gathering Dragon Balls in this game about Dragon Balls, which are pretty much sort of a side story in DBZ at that point. But the idea that you get these 7 magical things that are scattered around the earth and you can grant wishes. I think like maybe 10 hours into the game, they're like, this is a thing you can do. And it's just like this wonderful, like kind of side quest where like, I think they just show up in random locations and it'll show you on sort of the overworld map, like which hub areas have those in them.
Right.
And you can fly around and collect them. And then when you collect them all, you can wish enemies you've already beaten back to life and fight them again for experience. Or you can wish for rare items. And it'll just dump like a bunch of random, like hot food and like weird, like collectibles on you, and you're like, cool, you gave me like 4 bowls of soup and a porno magazine that I can give to my old trainer to level up our friendship.
Perfect.
So weird thing is, Cyber Connect 2, the studio that put it out, they also did Asura's Wrath a million years ago, which was, I remember when it came out, it was this gorgeous cel-shaded game that was heavily like QuickTime event, like heavy, whatever. And people were like, it's sort of like a playable anime, which is exactly what this is.
Yeah.
And I think all the times that it, like if it had spent another year in development, it would be a phenomenal game and one of the like the best uses of a license if they add like more, you know, hidden sub-stories and side quests and actually like loosened up a bit. But right now it's kind of like, it's pretty much just a straight shot retelling of DBZ.
And it's the entirety of it too, right?
It is the entirety of
the sagas,
which is nuts. Yeah.
That's crazy.
They do like a really good job of having like kind of side quests that like supplement like the like characters. Like, you know, there's like weird kind of lulls. Like basically it has like the main anime has like lots of filler episodes to kind of like, you know, plug up the holes of like where I think like Toriyama was still trying to make the manga and he was like, you know, having like back problems and like family strife. And he was like, I'm trying to draw them fighting as fast as I can. I'm one man. And they were like, hurry up. We need more things to animate. And he'd be like, make something up. And they're like, they go to the DMV. Gohan gets stuck in a cave. There's a robot there. Yamcha plays baseball. And they just like, they would just make up nonsense. And like the game does the same thing, except it's like weird side quests where it's like, oh no, your friend is dead. You gotta like turn into him using shape-shifting powers to go on fake dates so that his like ex-girlfriends don't get mad at him for ghosting. Like,
sure.
Literally?
Literally ghosting.
Yeah. So there's like a lot of really fun stuff in there that I'm really happy about, but I'm totally like, oh, it's such an almost. It's so close.
Yeah.
The combat is also just like, it's just like when you really, you know, nail it and get into it, it's super fun, but it feels like if you sped up Ni No Kuni, like if you're like, I'm going to use my friends to support and they're going to come in and cast spells and we're going to do this and I'm going to do some melee attacks, but it's all happening so fast that you're like, your camera is like stuck behind a rock and there's somebody just punching you in the face repeatedly. And you're like, I can't do anything.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classic
high school.
Yeah. But like that being said, like
stuck in
the world that they built for this and like the presentation is like so good. So anybody who's like actually a DBZ fan, kind of on the fence about a rewatch, wanting to like, you know, get nostalgic for the Toonami days, it's really cool for that.
Yeah.
If they do a classic Dragon Ball game, which would be so cool because nobody can fly yet. And there are like more vehicles and it's more about like weird ground combat and fighting people with a stick. Like that would be so cool.
Well, I was going to say, where would you want them to go next? Cause I'm so surprised they included all of DBZ in here. Like when they kept showing the Cell Saga and the Buu Saga, I was like, oh, you're going to all of this.
I think they screwed up.
Yeah.
It would have been so cool if they were like, hey, here's the first saga of Dragon Ball Z, except it's got like a crap ton of side quests and like everything is fine tuned. And like, if they were like, yeah, if they did like a yearly release where they just kind of took this existing world. Yeah. I mean, there totally is like, I would say it's definitely got some similar DNA to the Yakuza games where like some cutscenes are like incredibly gorgeously polished and other ones are just somebody standing there talking over subtitles and you're like, all right, I guess I'll help you. Yes, I will take your side quest. But like if they just did the Yakuza trick and reused the existing map, adding like a few new bells and whistles here and there, and like throwing in some new story beats, like, and maybe adding like new techniques, that would be really fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird to complain about this being a comprehensive Dragon Ball Z video game, but it's like, oh, I just wish it had like a little more polish.
It is surprising that they did that, but it's good to hear that as a Dragon Ball fan, you aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are talking about wanting Dragon Ball Super, but that runs into the even bigger problem of like, once again, everyone just gets way more powerful.
Yeah.
It's like, just scale it back. Like, get so many people haven't experienced classic Dragon Ball that it's like, that would be kind of crazy if it was like, hey, here's the Yakuza 0 of DBZ games. Like,
that'd be a cool place to go.
Yeah, here's a jumping on point with early stuff.
Yeah, I would love that. That cutscene disparity is one of my favorite things from like the PS2 era that you see all the time. I hope we don't have that in next gen, but yeah. Well, I'm glad you've been enjoying that. I am excited to jump into that as well. If you've been playing Kakarot, let us know what you've been thinking about in the comments. A couple things before we wrap up. Want to jump into a memory card story. Memory card is, of course, our weekly segment where you, the listeners and viewers at home, write in with your funny, weird, wacky, strange, whatever memories of your PlayStation gaming life, and we read those on the show. You can write into beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read them on the show every week.
Can we get some silly ones?
I
think we get a lot of really, like, really intense, kind of sad ones sometimes, and those are good, but, like, get some silly ones.
Give us some silly ones. I remember one of the earliest ones we read was...
I fought it on my PS3.
One of the earliest ones we read was about, I think, the guy who sold, like, 100 copies of a baseball game because, he tricked GameStop.
I love that story.
Yeah. So if you have weird ones like that, please send them in. This one, shorter one, because as you can hear, my voice is a bit hard to talk, comes from Ed. Ed wrote in to beyond@ign.com and said, "Beyond, Brian's comment about his parents' lack of gaming sparked my own personal memory card. My mom has never really been into gaming, but one weekend when I was home from college, I brought my PS2 with me to play some Silent Hill 2. My mom was sitting in the living room as I played on the TV in the dark, and she became fascinated with what was happening in the game. If you met my mom, she'd be the last person in the world you'd expect to take an interest in Silent Hill, but she kept remarking how much the game felt like a movie and how creepy it was. It was a rare moment where my mom shared any modicum of interest in video games. Every now and then, she still asks me whatever happened to that series, and I have to sadly explain to her that Konami uses it for Plinko machines. Now, I'll always remember that weird night, though, where my then middle-aged Catholic mom got really into J-horror. Love the show. Thanks for keeping me entertained every week, Ed." Short one, but thank you for writing in with that one. I thought
that's
just
great.
Funny,
yeah. I love that. Yeah, that does have a sad ending to that.
Yeah,
there's a rumor kicking around that they're working on two concurrent Silent Hill games, though.
That'd be
for Plinko, for Pachinko?
For Plinko.
No. For the real game console.
The irony of them using Silent Hill to make the loudest machines possible is like, there's nothing silent about.
I mean, Metal Gear Solid.
Pachinko parlors are terrifying, though.
Yeah.
They're some of the scariest places on earth.
Thank you for writing in with that. Tell us your pachinko horror stories or PlayStation horror stories. But writing in to beyond@ign.com, we'll read many more. We have a lot more to read in the weeks to come. Before we wrap up, a couple questions from people in the Facebook Beyond group. I reached out for questions. The first one comes from Christoph. Christoph asked, "What color will the PS5 disc cases be?"
Ooh, so God, that's a good question.
Those change sort of every generation. They've been traditionally black.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah.
I hate the blue so much.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Really?
What about the red of the PlayStation hits?
Red was
good.
Yeah.
I was okay with that for some reason.
Okay.
I hate the blue so much.
Why?
It feels like the same problem as the 360. I don't know. I like something that you can sort of be like, maybe they're movies. It's also easy to identify which things on your shelf are games if you're trying to sort stuff out.
That's true. They do look like
movies. I liked clear. I thought clear was nice for PS3. Clear
black.
Black is good.
White would be really awesome.
Purple?
No.
No.
You gotta stop.
What about like a clear red? I love this question. I love this. I remember when
what's like, a clear, like what's a clear red?
Like wet blood.
What? Yeah, supposed to dry blood.
Yeah. When it's still wet, you know, like a liquid.
You know, blood's like purple in real life.
They should not make the PlayStation. Actually, that'd be really scary if they made like blood colored cases. Yeah.
Well, I loved when games would have specialty cases too. I wish that would happen more often.
So I remember in fourth grade, one of those times when I asked like a dumb question or said a dumb thing that just made someone just look at me cockeyed.
The old days where you would say dumb
things. So I can't even remember what game it was, but I remember like Killer Instinct had just come out, which on Super Nintendo had a black cartridge, and like I think Donkey Kong Country on, or Donkey Kong Land on Game Boy had like a yellow cart. Yep. And like it was occasionally like, oh cool, like they're mixing it up, getting kind of kooky with
Ocarina the colors. It was gold.
But it was like, it was long before gold. That was way too crazy. But I was like definitely like kind of like, hey, that's kind of nice, like Killer Instinct, black cartridge, that's badass. And then somebody's like, I got this new game, and I was like, what color is it? They were like, what? And I was like, you know, Killer Instinct is like black. I'm like, what color is it? And he's like, it's freaking gray, dude. And I was like, all right, sorry, you know. Yeah.
That's actually a thing I really miss about the cartridge era, was just being like, what do they look like? Fat little rectangles or like funny little squares. Like I remember on the Wii U, the sides of the disc were like soft and rounded, and I was just that's so cool because it's like slightly different than all the other discs and all the other systems.
I mean, GameCube mini discs were such a novelty too.
Those were so cool.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Even UMDs were like,
oh, those were wild.
I was like, this is so awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like a disc and a cartridge at the same time.
So tired of all of the corners on my mini discs using wind resistance to slow them down. This is much faster because it's not red. What?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It was like egg-shaped, kind of.
The reality is it'll probably be gray or black or something boring, and they'll be phased out because we download games.
I hope that they make them custom for each game.
I would love
And that. I hope that that's a complete nonsense library, and you get like a cool, scary game, and it's like a blood red, and then you get like a cool cyber game, and it's like silver.
That'd be great.
And then they'll have like marbled ones. I want them to be like D&D dice. I want them to be crazy. I want glow-in-the-dark cases.
That's going
to
look like your shelf is going to look nonsense.
My shelf is nonsense right now. I got a new entertainment center and there's no room for my games. I have them all in bags next to the nice
bags.
I have like four grocery bags full of Blu-rays and discs. It looks like crazy people live in my house. Maybe they do, who knows.
Anyway, Joshua asks on a different note, I'm just bringing the mood right down, what are some games that helped you cope with a loss? And I wanted to bring this one up mostly because it ties to a PlayStation memory for me. The PS3, the year my mom died when I was in high school, was the same year I got a PlayStation 3 for Christmas. So 9 months later, it was our first Christmas without her. And I got the PS3 with, I think, Uncharted 1 and 2 had just come out that year. So I got both of those and Infamous and played through all of those through vacation. It was just kind of this, like, my introduction to the PS3 was these great first-party games.
Right.
And they were all I played, because traditionally every Christmas we'd wake up and play games together based on whatever I got for Christmas morning. And so this was sort of a, like, these are my first games without my mom. Here's what I'm playing. But it ties into the PlayStation history we've had together. So...
yeah, generally through loss or breakups, my go-to are like big, goofy, open world games that have a bunch of boxes to tick off, because video games are inherently escapism, but like none so more than like a giant open world game where you just have a million things to do. You're not going through some narrative story. You're not really watching a ton of cutscenes. You're just like flipping over cars and trucks and jumping on buildings and collecting eggs and pigeons or whatever you're doing in some big dumb action game. I love stuff like that. That's usually my go-to. I try to play stuff that's like slightly goofier or more optimistic.
Yeah.
I think I tried through grief to like dive headfirst into like really dark, miserable stuff. And I think that only carries you so far.
Yeah.
It definitely helps. Like there's definitely, like, I remember like the weekend we buried my mom, I went to go see Blade Runner 2049. Mm. And I was like, well, that's much worse. That world is like a lot worse than what I'm dealing with. So that helps, because it's sort of like that reverse escapism of being like, I'm going to look at something that's so bad that it makes my bad stuff feel better in comparison. But I think generally, like, I try, like, I've been in a weird funk this year so far. And so I've been trying to connect with stuff that, like, is a little bit more upbeat, and then I'm just not really finding it. So I guess because I'm playing all these like Soulsborne games that are just like murdering me and telling me like, oh, you don't have enough bone blood.
This year kicking your ass. Well, how about some games kick your ass too?
Yeah.
Get your ass kicked.
Exactly.
You feel better.
Yeah. Like if you're depressed, why don't you get killed by Dartholomew, the 40-foot elk?
The wet dog.
We'll give you a bunch of items that you don't understand.
In 2009, I basically dropped out of art school to pursue this internship thing that eventually turned into, long story short, a career in the video game industry, but exploded in my face before that happened. And I basically moved in with my dad and was like living on his couch. And like, I had a MacBook Pro that I ran boot camp on and then ran a pirated copy of Far Cry 2. Sorry, Far Cry. I think I've made it up to you in time since then. But that's a game where you can run around and burn things and just set everything on fire, which is exactly what I did.
You didn't pay for Windows?
Actually, I think I did pay for Windows.
Why don't you apologize to the good folks at Windows?
I've plugged Game Pass like 8 times this episode. What
You've
do you
done
want?
Your due diligence.
Bill Gates is only the second richest man in the world.
How dare you?
Everybody order some Xbox games on Amazon. Wait, no, don't do that.
At Windows.
No, but so I played through Far Cry 2, I think mostly, which is a game where you set a lot of fires. It's great. It's got procedurally generated fire. It's cool. Everything is very dry. You have a fever the whole time, so you're burning up too. Everything just burns in that game. And I proceeded to fry the motherboard in my MacBook doing that, which I remember would like, I'd have it in my lap and I'd be like, oh, this is burning my legs. I'm going to put this on the coffee table. And it would have like a steam outline on like the glass coffee table. And I'm like, it's probably not good for it.
Was it while you were setting fires in that game?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the graphics are too good.
You need haptic feedback when your computer can just go on fire too.
Just burn your legs with Far Cry 2. Run it now on Windows.
That's
on
like
Mac OS.
It's like if you played an Apache helicopter game on the PS4 Pro.
Oh just my like, God.
Loud ass.
Yeah. I would love that.
Recreation of your actual system.
Yeah. That was like one of the few times I've seen my dad like genuinely really disappointed with me. And I was just like sitting there playing Far Cry and just burning shit and like just making a real, real mess of things and just shooting guns off. And he's just like, you need to get a job. And I was like, okay, sorry.
Almost second to last one, Graham asked, what do you guys think of Watch Dogs Legion? Is it going to be a PS5 game? So they've said before that it is coming to cross-gen, but I did want to bring up Legion because we kind of haven't heard about it much. We were talking about Watch Dogs earlier. Are you guys excited for it? It's been since E3, really, that we've heard about
it. I'm taking a very specific approach with that game, which is, cool, I'll play it when it's out. I'm not hyped for it. I'm not excited for it. I'm not counting down the days. I think it's going to kick ass, and I think it's going to be fun as hell, and I think it's going to be revolutionary in a lot of ways, and I'm also not starving for it. So when it shows up, I'm playing it on day one. I'll buy the special edition that won't come with a dog because they said that there aren't dogs in that game.
Why do they keep doing this stuff?
That's exclusive journalism I got at
Wrong
E3.
You
guys are welcome. Yeah, so I can't wait for that. I will play it, but I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh no, it got delayed, or oh no, this and that. I can't, count down the seconds for it. When it shows up, I'll love it, I'll enjoy it, but I'm not going to burn myself out getting excited for it. I have enough games that are doing that to me right now.
Yeah.
I was really excited for that game when I mistakenly thought that it was coming out last fall, and then I heard that it was not coming out. It was coming out in the spring, and I was like, okay, I'll play that before Cyberpunk, and then they're like, no, you're not, and I was like, okay, well, I'll play it next. So it's basically like a revisit of the whole thing with the first Watch Dogs. If that comes out as like a launch game for next gen, like that seems very cool. I feel like that's definitely one of those things where they're
Seems like a great.
We now have more people. Everyone has a better personality. Like we used the cloud to make everyone more British or whatever is happening.
You can see the old lady's mustache better.
Yeah. We've got all sorts of cool wrinkles. Everyone's very dehydrated there.
We're going to have cool wrinkles by the time that old ass comes out.
No, I'm going to be a silver fox. It's going to be great. No, I'm really excited for it, but also like what Brian said, like it's just one of those things where I'm like, I'll play it when it's out and I'm going to ignore everything until then.
Yeah. See, saying it might be a launch game just got me really excited for it now.
That could be a really fun launch game, I think.
Yeah.
And last but not least, Dan asked, what's in Max's pocket?
Shoot, nothing exciting.
Nothing this week?
Oh, nothing great.
Sometimes there's nothing.
What is there? It's the same. Oh, wait, no.
It's eggs.
This is pen.
Is that a vape pen?
No, it's a regular, an old-fashioned writing pen.
I think that's a vape pen.
Those are outlawed.
Do they make vape pens that you can click? Like,
yeah, how do you think you tricked the cops, man? Get the jakes off your tail. Po-9.
What?
Boys in blue.
Po-9?
Never heard of the Po-9?
What is that?
The police.
What? Is that like Pony K-9? Anyway,
thank you so much for listening to this episode of Podcast Beyond, episode 627 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show. Before we go out for the week, I did want to put out a call for a new segment we like to start doing next week. We'll talk about what it is more in full next week, but write into beyond@IGN.com with this prompt. Basically, we want to hear from all of you out there about like that one thing, whether it was a gameplay hook or a scene in a game or a particular performance from a character in a game or a voice actor, or, you know, the way a level was lit, something, some small little detail in a PlayStation game that you played, preferably first party or exclusive or multi-platform if you played it on PlayStation, but write in and describe to us about that one little thing that really grabbed you and made you love a specific game. It can be from any generation, whenever you played it. Write in to us with that. Write in with the subject line, that one thing, to beyond@IGN.com, and we'll start to read these on the show each week. Basically, we want to dive into the games we love, but specifically like the little touches to them that really make us love them and sort of go the extra mile for why we care about them so much.
I'll kick it off with a very quick one.
Yeah.
Punching through a treasure chest in God of War.
Yes.
It is an amazing little thing. It's so satisfying. I've been opening treasure chests in video games since the 80s, and it's wonderful to see that angry bald man just punch a hole through it and steal the treasures.
The first time he punched open a chest in the game, I was like, oh, that's how we're doing that in this game. Okay, yeah, that exactly. is.
There's like other games where you're just like, you're fiddling with a lock-picking mechanic, and Kratos is like, no!
Yep.
I love that.
It's great. So yeah, it's something like that, whether it is a gameplay mechanic or something else, write into beyond@IGN.com, and we'll read those on the show. You can write a novel if you would like. We'll probably condense it on the show, or you can write a quick couple of sentences, preferably probably around there, and we'll read those on the show each week. And
one more really quick one, the scream you hear when you get to the top of the first ladder in Bloodborne, when you get up there and it just goes like, you're like, I'm here, Bloodborne. Almost went the whole episode without saying Bloodborne.
Cool. I was thinking about all the good things in Bloodborne. A lot of them.
Think about them for next week. And we'll be, of course, sharing some of our favorites on the show as well. I also did want to call out, if you haven't listened this week, I was on this week's episode of PS I Love You XOXO over on the Kind of Funny game side of things, because we started a Fantasy Critic League, started by Blessing and Greg over there, where we've each drafted a league of games, and by the end of the year, we will see which games are reviewed the best.
Mm-hmm.
Across the field. My list, for those who don't know, are Ghost of Tsushima, Watch Dogs Legion, the untitled Batman game from WB Games Montreal.
Is that the name of it?
God, I hope they call it that.
God, that'd be great.
Untitled Batman.
And he's just a nuisance. He's just throwing British people's lunches in
that'd
the river.
Great.
Just criminals trying to go about their daily job, and Batman shows up and just like steals their jam or whatever.
Spelunky 2, Assassin's Creed 2020, and Psychonauts 2. So all of these games, whatever they are reviewed, I will get a certain amount of points for. If they come out this year, some of those games, of course, are not announced. So if they don't come out this year, I don't get any points. But based on how they're reviewed, I'll either receive points or get docked points. And at the end of the year, we'll tally them all up. I can also draft more games to my list. We each have a budget. Yeah, it's fine. We each have a budget of about $100 to spend. I don't know how much each game will cost. Tell me what games I should buy into this grouping. Obviously, you may be noticing some big games like The Last of Us Part 2 and Cyberpunk are not on my list. Those games were taken by other people in the draft, but you can find out all those games by listening to that episode. I'm happy with my list.
Cool. While you're over there checking out Jonathan's Cricket League, you can also check out the We Have Cool Friends episodes that Brian and I were on. Jumped over there, swung by, just had a long old chat with Greg, which was fun.
Good old friend.
Also, somebody on Twitter asked me what was in my pocket, and I was like, I should put something good in my pocket, and then that never got asked on the show. But watching that episode, please know that there's a small plastic figurine of Yamcha from Dragon Ball Z lying in a crater that I had
that's
in my
amazing.
Pocket. And then I forgot it was in my pocket and carried it around for literally the entire weekend. So,
wow. That's great.
Yeah.
I think the good thing is that your dad is proud of you now.
He's actually, I think he's just gotten tired. So he's got less energy to be disappointed.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening and or watching to this episode. You can find me at Twitter and Instagram at JM Dornbush. Max is at Max Scoville.
You find me Arby's Official.
That as well. And Brian is at Agent Bizzle.
_IHOP.
Yeah.
_IHOP. Of course.
Use hashtag YoPlay to find us both and all of our. I'm just kidding.
Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. Thank you so much for listening and or watching to this episode. And as always, beyond.
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 Speaking of Yoplait, did I say that my kid calls yogurt Lolioko?
Is that like a Zelda town?
She'd be like, Lolioko. And I'm like, wow, are you yodeling? Initially, yogurt.
That's adorable. Thank you, guys.
Hey, Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.